gentlemen, welcome to a special edition of the Labor and Legal Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We're sponsored by Soloff and Zervanos. We've got a fantastic broadcast. Sherelle Parker, Democratic candidate for mayor of the city of Philadelphia, is our guest. Sherelle, how are you?
I'm coming along. Thank you all so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. We've had you on the Labor Show. Let's get right to it. First of all, we're coming down the home stretch. How are you doing?
Listen, I'm doing the best I can. I'm trying to get everywhere I can possibly be, doing my best to earn the support of voters across the city. And I'm doing the best I can.
Well, we're here to support, and we know that the home stretch is coming. You know, our labor unions are behind you 100%. And, you know, Brian Boyer's got the troops rolling here in the city of Philadelphia. In fact, I just got done a broadcast with Joe Williams of the elevator constructors. They got all the crews out there. So, first of all, what made you want to be mayor?
Oh, wow. I have had a spirit of service in me for a long time. And when this opportunity presented itself, I thought that my real life lived experience, along with my intergovernmental experience, having served at both the local and the state level, and having worked with the federal government, along with my academic preparedness, I felt like all of it together uniquely qualified me to meet this moment in our city's history. And if it's God's will and the people give me a chance, I'm going to put all those skills to work to make our city the Philadelphia we all want to live in.
Now, one of the things that you said recently was bringing people together. Okay. Talk about that and the importance of bringing, you know, our leaders together, obviously our communities together, in accomplishing your goals.
You know what I really like about that question? During the primary election, you'll remember we had a record number of debates and forums. And in those debates, I always talked about the convening power of the mayor's office, the mayor's ability to bring different stakeholders together to come to agreement and trying to solve really complex problems. And I remember sort of laughing at me, like, how is the convening power a powerful tool? They didn't know that unifying people or bringing people together to sit down and get to yes on a complex issue, we have to do more of that. In addition, I'm so proud that no matter the race, the class, the socioeconomic status, the zip code, the religion, sexual orientation, identity, I didn't care who the constituency was. I didn't change my message based on the audience. You know, it was the same for everybody, because I noticed no matter where I went, Philadelphians wanted the same thing. They want a safer city, a cleaner city, green. They want economic opportunity for all. That's where my love and support for the building trades, along with organized labor and unions, comes from, because my grandmother was a domestic worker, that she wasn't a part of a union, right? So when she got old and she could no longer get on her hands and knees and clean other people's houses, there was no retirement security for her, no pension, you know, no health care, employer sponsored health care, union sponsored health care. So I grew up on welfare, right? Public assistance. That's where sort of the drive and the passion comes from, to say, look, it's a lot of problems, but if it's one Philly, a united city, and we come together, one Philly, a united city, we can do this tough work together.
Absolutely. John Zervanos, you wanted to talk a little bit. Obviously, crime is a big part of the discussion. John, if you will.
Yeah. Hi, John.
Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. Our law firm, we do a fair amount of crime victims litigation, but in the civil context, where if a tragedy occurs at the hands of a criminal, folks come to us and ask us if we can help them in obtaining a compensation in the civil setting, not really through the criminal courts. And it's just interesting that, you know, we're having the show today, because just this morning I had clients in my office where they were on my website and they noticed the podcast and so forth. And we have these shows, we convert them to podcasts, and they were complimenting me for some of the guests we had. I said, well, you're going to have to tune in this week because we're going to have the soon to be mayor on our show. And they said, really? I said, yeah. I said, well, you got to ask her, what are you going to do about crime, like everybody else asked you? And unfortunately for them, their father was killed at a bank while I was trying to withdraw money out of an ATM. And that's a whole story. And I won't get into the facts and the specifics, but we've created a civil case over it. And, you know, the concern that they have is in the context of the criminal prosecution. And I know you're not working at the DA's office and there's not a lot you can do about it, but certainly the relationship between the mayor's office and the police, and when everybody was running for mayor, we all heard about the lack of police. Not, you know, we're always trying to recruit more police and we're always on a shortage, just like a lot of these urban communities. Do you have any plans specifically on how to recruit more qualified candidates for the academy and then encourage them to stay on the force
and not leave after they've been trained by us, right?
Exactly. Because we all know it's a difficult job.
Yes, sir. No, John, I appreciate that. I appreciate that question, and my thoughts and prayers to your clients who have experienced that tragedy. I introduced the Comprehensive Neighborhood Safety and Community Policing Plan during my tenure in city council. It was long before I announced that I was a candidate for mayor. In it, it was a comprehensive plan, and my strategy is sort of based on the tenets of what I call a pie: prevention, intervention, and then enforcement, right? And you need all of it. And support for victims of crime was a part of my plan, a victim relocation, victim and witness relocation, you know, ensuring that we had the technology that we needed, right? We not only need a well-trained police department, but we need one that is functioning with modern technology. Right now, and I feel like our police department is functioning with Flintstone equipment, right? They need modern forensics unit. They need, you know, wiretapping technology, gunshot detection, fingerprint, the latest, most modern technology. So it's a comprehensive approach. And it's also us ensuring that people know you won't just get away with anything you want in the city. But the mayor has to appoint a police commissioner. And while I've said I will not make personnel decisions on the campaign trail, I have said that I want to search nationally and locally for a police commissioner who knows Philadelphia. If I tell you, you know, at, you know, Broad and Chestnut, I don't want you to need a GPS to get there. Just come see me at Broad and Chestnut, right? I want you to know our city. And you can't be afraid to make tough decisions. Because some of the things that we need to do here in this city, tough decisions, and some people are not going to like them. Let me give you an example. You can't count, you shouldn't, it, no one should think that they should be able to carry in a weapon illegally in the city. And if you're caught with that weapon, that you won't be arrested. No one should think that they're going to be able to engage in a quality of life crime and not think that there's going to be some consequences, or that you can walk into any store, any retail establishment, steal up to $499 worth of merchandise, and you won't be arrested. Absolutely. That's not going down in a park administration. But the police commissioner, along with the rank and file officers, they have to know that they have a mayor who's not afraid to stand up and say, listen, yes, it's true. We will have zero tolerance for any misuse and or abuse of authority by members of our police department, our law enforcement officials. But they also need to know that they have a mayor that's going to support them with doing their jobs and protecting and serving us. And it's one of the most dangerous jobs you can ever do. And they have to know that we see them and we value them.
You're speaking of the police, correct?
Yes, I am, John. Yes.
Yeah. You know, I've spoken to a number of police officers, and you know, one officer gave me a really interesting example. He said, if somebody comes and robs your home or your place of business, and you feel threatened, legitimately threatened, bodily harm and so forth, and you pull out a gun because they're pulling a gun on you, and you shoot that person, no one's going to run after that homeowner or business owner. Their immediate reaction is he was trying to protect his property, he was trying to protect his life and his family. But he says, as a police officer, if I go for my weapon and use it on that person who's attempting to potentially pose harm on me, I'm getting charged. And I never thought of it like that. And I thought it was kind of an interesting example of that kind of threat that they lead in you know, on the job every day. And it's part of the problem why you can't recruit people, and then you can't keep them. And
no,
go ahead.
I agree, John. No, John, I agree. I agree with you. And it is an example also of why we need a well-trained police force. And we can't be apologetic when we talk about the need for making sure that our officers, you know, are well-trained. And we can't do that without making sure that they are adequately funded. So it's not like an either or for me. The well-trained with the most, I've never known the industry where people are afraid of investing in professional development. You're a lawyer. You all have what? Continuing legal education credits, right? And I don't know if you have to keep up with them every year or something like that, right? Why don't we do that? Or within our police department, or
I think that's
other
a great idea. I think that's a great idea.
And see, then, so it's those kind of things.
And then you take the example of a present situation, and I'm not talking a George Floyd situation, something local here, and then say, well, here's what happened, and what can we do different? And take the real life example of what happened in the city of Philadelphia, where every officer can relate to it, and then have somebody apply what he or she should do under the same circumstances. I think that's a great idea.
Let me jump in there for a second. Let's talk about Sherelle, the 911 officers. Dispatchers. One of the issues, and this isn't very, if it didn't happen to me, I wouldn't have believed it. But I was driving up I guess I was on Henry Avenue going up to Roxburgh, but I was going up to Plymouth, and I'm driving. It's a Saturday morning or Friday morning, and I'm going up to do a broadcast. And I go around the bend, and there's a tree on fire. Okay. Oh. It's very close to a house. It's not a big one, but it's close. I don't know. And I'm like, oh my God, I must be the first one. So I pull over, I call 911. The dispatcher answers right away. And the police dispatcher was trying to get the fire department dispatcher on, couldn't get them. And we waited for 5 minutes. And I could see the guy was somewhat embarrassed. And I'm like, let's just hang in there. I know there's a firehouse not far from there on Ridge Avenue. Anyway, thankfully no one got hurt. And the guy who owned the house was able to put it out. But I know there's a shortage of 911 operators in the city. Talk about that and how we're going to remedy it.
You know what? The reason why I appreciate that question is because during the primary, I heard a lot of people, you know, when you're trying to gain support from people, people were mentioning a whole lot of different issues. I was really proud that when it came to the challenges facing 911 dispatchers in the city of Philadelphia, I had pre-civil unrest and pre-COVID, I had introduced and held a public hearing, Councilmember Jones and I, about the challenges that and the shortage and the dispatchers that you just mentioned that you experienced. Well, I also didn't know until we had the, that's why it's so important, until we had the hearings, it's so important to listen to people. I didn't know how much mandated overtime, the stress and trauma that it puts on the family because it was the shortage. I didn't know how many of them were women, women of color, single women who, because that's a civilianized, a team of people. And so making sure that we train and that we recruit and that we pay equitably. That's important. Because we were talking about, I did one on hazard pay for sanitation workers. And then the other one was about the 911 dispatcher. So where's the upward mobility in the department? Morale matters, right? The recruitment matters. When John talked about, listen, you know, how do you recruit them and you get them to come, but retention, how do you get them to stay? That is how. And you can't put a line, and this is why organized labor and unions mean so much. You can't be like a company that puts a catchy phrase up on a website. These workers are essential. If workers are essential, I want to see it in my work schedule. I want to see it in my direct deposit when my paycheck gets there every 2 weeks. I want to see it in my ability to take care of my family. So a lot of challenges facing that constituency, and I'm going to stay focused on it, because if the dispatchers are not being scheduled appropriately, and we're dealing with a lot of mandated double overtime for some people, that doesn't help us, because every time it's a crisis. When exactly. We call 911, we need you.
And that's a fact. And let's spitfire, because we only have a few minutes left. The opioid epidemic in Kensington Avenue, you have a plan, and it's a very interesting one. Talk about that.
Well, listen, I'm just finishing up. I did a interview, but I just left a constituency who are interested in preserving a green space here in the city of Philadelphia as a violence prevention tool. And one of the things they also talked about was mental health and addiction and how their work would help in that area. Well, I had to tell them, you know, I was the openly, I affirmed that I was in no way, shape, or form supportive of safe injection sites. And I can remember people like standing up or going on television or radio. She's not compassionate. She lacks compassion. She just thinks that we're going to police our way and lock people up. She wants to criminalize homelessness and addiction. And that's a lie. Nothing could be further from the truth. What I did say is we have to shut down the open air drug market and open air drug use. And the people who live in Kensington and that Harrogate area, they have a right to not have that as being a normal thing in their community, and that we should use every agency at the local, state, and federal level to help us solve that. But I also talked about a solution being access to long-term care, housing, and economic opportunity. And that goes for addiction. That goes for mental and behavioral health challenges. And not just the individuals who are suffering from the addiction or mental health challenges, but whole families are traumatized as a result of it. But you imagine the trauma that the people who live there feel, who have to watch people. If I won't even begin to tell you, if you haven't seen it yourself, some of the things that go on in that community on a daily basis. And you want kids walking through that and past that and around that. And business owners are trying to open up a business and enact commerce and do business there. It's no way, it's not normal. And you know, people gonna call me a lot of names. You heard me say it before, but, you know, I thank God I stand on strong, solid footing here and tell you I'm going to work with all of our officials. Councilwoman Ketsey Lozada, she and I have talked. We have some of the same shared values about how we need to address this. She and I are going to be excellent partners together and working with the people who live there, the organizations that are already there, and not take prescriptions for a problem like a safe injection site when the people who live there, that's not what they were jumping up and down about. Yeah.
And it's clear that the people and that the communities don't want safe injection sites, because you're just telling the drug dealers what it's a supply and demand situation. And the statistics are, in Canada, where they, you know, where they have them, are just terrible. John, a follow-up question.
Oh, you know, I'm still intrigued by the last conversation about, and I forgive me, but I really, really like when you brought up, gee, John, you're a lawyer. You got to go to these continuing legal education seminars. You know, you just struck a chord with me. I really think that that would be an effective way to, because when police are brought together and they kind of, there's a fraternity there, but when they're kind of bonding, being presented with a common issue, and they all kind of rally around each other and get to support each other, but then they hear each other communicate as they're being presented with this crisis about what do you do on the spot when you feel threatened? And I just think that's, I never heard that before, but I'm really thinking, wow, what an idea. I really like it.
Well, you know,
John, I'm gonna call on you. You just wait. If it's God's will and the people give me the ability to be their mayor, and we have to, because we have to get support, right? You have to build support for programs that you want to proffer. And that's a strategy that we want to employ as it relates to training in our police department.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I would love to be able to call on you to say, tell us out loud what you think about that.
Yeah, because they could all communicate with each other and hear each other's concerns. And then they can rally behind that support. And then it's kind of like when I go to these lawyer conferences, we kind of all become enthusiastic. We're all hit with the stresses of our jobs and the cases that we have, and it wears on you. And then you get together at these conventions or retreats or meetings, and it's like food, and you get fired up about, okay, I'm gonna hit the ground running on Monday. I got this. And you get these police that are all gathered in a room where they're hearing this story about this last unfortunate crisis that one of their officers was presented with. And they all kind of hear about how they might be able to effectively deal with it the next time it happens, but they're all together there. I think it's a great idea.
Learning from each other, right?
Exactly, yes. It's a great idea.
So having said that, we have about 3 minutes left. And with the last minute, I want to talk about getting the vote out. I want to spitfire for 2 minutes, okay? Number one, education. You went to school in the public school system. You're a success story. Talk about I got about a minute with education. Spitfire, if you will.
Education is puts people on a path to self-sufficiency. Every industry that's thriving in the city of Philadelphia, we should have a workforce development pipeline to it so that our people can be trained. Everybody's not going to go to college. That's why the work in the building trades is so important. And it's funny, Ryan Boyer is always messing with me about it, and Mungo Sanchez and the carpenters, because I'm going to be paying back the University of Pennsylvania student loan debt until I'm dead. And I have plumbers and carpenters and laborers who make triple my salary. We've got to give our children access, and life sciences and biotech lab technicians that could get training, graduate, make $50,000, $60,000 a year, healthcare, pension, 401k. We've got to do it.
Okay. Having said that, talk about taxes in the city of Philadelphia. 1 minute.
Listen, taxes, be real clear that 41% of Philadelphia's $6 billion in general fund revenue that keeps our city going, that is responsible for paying for the services and supports that we provide, 41% of that comes from the business community, 30% from wage and net profits. The other 11% comes from business income and receipts taxes, our BERT, 41%. We've got to address safe and address clean, because we want businesses to locate here, right? And while I support the continued reduction of wage taxes, it's right now such a primary source of revenue. I feel like we need to grow the economic pie to get to a place where we can have a more accelerated reduction. But if we make the city safer, make it cleaner, greener, and have all of our cultural amenities. We are the birthplace of democracy. We've forgotten who we are. We're the best city in the nation. We got to clean it up and make it safe first, so somebody wants to be here.
Absolutely. John, I'm going to give you 30 seconds, and then I'm going to ask Sherelle to tell us why people should get out there and vote, and that this election is not over. John, if you would.
Hey, listen, I the only thing I'm going to add is I'm very pleased that you've agreed to join us today. I'm certainly enthusiastic about the message you're putting out, and I look forward to calling you mayor over the next 4 years.
Fantastic. Thank you, John. Thank you so much.
Sherelle, as we close up, there are a lot of people in this city, okay, that think that just because you win the Democratic primary, the election is over. They'll take it for granted. Okay, please tell them nothing could be further from the truth. And the fact is, we can't take anything for granted, and we got to get the vote out.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. If you want to see me get a little frustrated, not a whole lot frustrated, you let me hear someone say they only vote in presidential elections. And I tell them, as much as I love our president and our federal government, what do they have to do with when your trash get picked up, fixing the potholes in the street, you know, policing in our city, cleaning our city, funding public education right here in our city. So it's easy to be what I call an expert AOP. These are people who are expert articulators of problems. They can tell you about the problem around and around and around. But being a part of the democratic process, that's a part of the solution as well. Now, have people gotten frustrated because they say, look, I go vote, but things, I don't like the way things look in my neighborhood. We keep pushing the process. We keep pushing and calling for accountability. So if people come out to vote on this Tuesday, the days are running together for me. I'm doing, you know, 12, 15 hour days. But I'm telling you, if you give me the opportunity to serve and become your 100th mayor, Philadelphia, I'm going to give you everything that I've got. And we're going to focus on one Philly, a united city. We won't let anybody divide and conquer us.
Sherelle Parker, we want to thank you so much for joining us on a special broadcast of a labor and legal show here on WWDB Talk 860. Want to thank my co-host John Cervantes and Sullivan Cervantes for making this show possible, and our sponsors. And of course, we want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. On behalf of John Cervantes and on behalf of Sherelle Parker, our next mayor of the city of Philadelphia, get out the vote. Don't take anything for granted. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a good one.
Thank you, Sherelle.